Welcome to A Quiet Life. I'm your host, Ruth Amos. 1 Thessalonians 4 says, make it your ambition to lead a quiet life. In this podcast, I chat to all sorts of normal Christians, asking them just how they live their quiet lives and how they integrate their faith into their daily lives. I hope that by listening, you will be encouraged to go out and live your own quiet life to the glory of God. You can find the episode show notes, the Quiet Life blog, and other resources at ruthamos.com.au. That's ruthamos.com.au. Now let's get on with the show. Hello, I'm Ruth. It's great to be here with you. This is episode 67 of A Quiet Life, and as I record this, it is Wednesday the 20th of May 2020. And today's interview is an amazing talk with Marion. We recorded it all before we locked down, and I feel like many years has passed since then. And as I listened through to do the transcript, I was like, oh yeah, this story. Oh yeah, that story. Just stunning. So I think you're going to really enjoy the stories that Marion tells and the insight that she shows through them. Me in the last week, I've been part of a couple of Zooms with the two church congregations I'm part of. So I did Alpha Online with St. Clement's last Wednesday night, and I was just stunned. I was stunned by how happy I was to see everybody's faces. There were about 76 different Zoom windows, so I kept clicking through the screens and saying, oh, look, oh, there they are, and then I'd wave. And of course, you can't tell who anybody is waving to, so everybody was just, it was just really funny. But it was just so lovely to see everyone's faces again. And then on Sunday, I did Sunday church with St. Luke's Anglican, and that was just so lovely as well. And just to see people's faces, and it was a slightly smaller Zoom, so we could actually have conversation and share things, which was really nice. And both of those just reminded me so much how I'm missing seeing people's faces. And, you know, I'm an introvert, so I can convince myself that I'm quite happily here, sitting here, doing my own thing, and if everyone would just stay away, I'd be all right. And there is part of that in my life, for sure, but I am missing people. I am missing my church family, and the Zoom reminded me of that. And then today I learned that, I can't say this without crying. This is the second time I've recorded this intro, but anyway, I learned that one of my church friends passed away. So David was such an encouragement to me and a really solid prayer support when I was struggling with uni and trying to figure out whether to leave working there or not. And he'd come up on a Sunday and give me a huge hug and say, you know, I'm praying for you. And it was such a blessing. And it's just really hard to think that I won't see his face again this side of eternity. And, I mean, heaven's going to be wonderful, but there are hard times on the way. And I just want to send my love to Joy and all the family as they deal with that. And to Judy, too, who's lost her husband, Winston. Yeah, it's a tough time sometimes. And sometimes these things feel a bit amplified by what we're going through at the moment. But we do have heaven to look forward to, and heaven is going to be a really wonderful party. And speaking of wonderful parties, if I can just pull myself together, hang on while I just wipe my eyes here, get my happy face back on. But we are going to have a wonderful party because my daughter got engaged last week. So Jess and Jordan, we're just so, so happy for you. We are so absolutely thrilled, and they will be married very soon, in a COVID wedding. End of June is the planned date, and we won't be able to be there with them, but it's still very exciting. It's just wonderful. And with technology, we can be part of it. We have been more a part of it, and it was just so lovely to have them again, you know, chat to us by video and show us her left hand with the ring on it and how excited she was. It did look like they got engaged in a shopping centre, but they assured us it wasn't the case. So anyway, that's just really lovely news that I've had in the last week. It's been very good, and there is so much happening in my life right now, and I can't tell you about all of it, or we wouldn't need an interview, would we? There is a lot happening. Life is just as bumpy, just as full as it was before lockdown, and I'm sure it's the same for you. Life doesn't stop. We can stop the cars and we can stop the shops and we can stop all kinds of things, but life doesn't just stop just because we want it to. And we're all going through bits and pieces, and maybe our support mechanisms aren't as secure as we'd hope they'd be, or, you know, we just don't get the little bump into people and have conversations at church type support. And so I appreciate your prayers in what I'm going through, and I will be praying for you. And if you want me to pray for something specific, please drop me a line, because I assure you, as soon as I get one of those prayer, even a prayer call out on Facebook, I just stop everything I'm doing and pray straight away so that I don't forget and make sure I pray. So I'll be praying for you, and you pray for me. And the thing is that stories like Marion's today, they remind us that God is there through all the ups and downs. And that's why we need to hear these stories. And that's one of the reasons why I do this podcast. So if you think this story can be helpful to someone else, or that someone else will be blessed by it or encouraged or helped in their walk, please share this podcast with them, because I would love to be of help to anybody who I can be. Anyway, so as I've said, we need to hear these stories. Let me shut up and you can hear from Marion now. Today's guest is Marion, and I think I have known Marion all her life. Not all mine, because she's a nice young person. So she's actually one of Mum and Dad's godchildren. We've grown up together, but like not in each other's pockets, different sort of churches and stuff, and then come together for special family occasions. And then Marion became an adult, as you do, and the age difference in just stopped mattering altogether. And it's just really cool to see how you've grown up into this, not just a real person, but an amazing person. So I'm looking forward to sharing my friendship with Marion with all of my listeners. Cool. So very welcome.
Thank you.
All right, so question one always, how did you become a Christian?
I was thinking about this the other day and chatting to someone at church and saying it'd be fabulous to have this amazing conversion story. But for me, not so much. I obviously grew up in a Christian home because my dad was an Anglican minister, and Mum and Dad were missionaries with CMS when I was born. Growing up, I had this sense that God had a plan for me, because when I was 3 months old, I actually had appendicitis. And had my appendix removed in East Africa by an eye surgeon. and as an adult, you go, wow. But as a kid, you just go, oh, so I had an operation as a three-month-old. But I think that gave a sense of purpose throughout my childhood, and particularly through my teen years. Mm-hmm. And then as 30 years ago this summer, I was on Mayfield Camp, which is an Anglican camp, and I experienced God in an undeniable way. So I, one night in my tent, I was praying, and I just had this amazing sense of God's presence. So I think that really kept me going through the teenage years, where you question what life's all about. Mm. And I guess that's my story. Yeah. Obviously that's changed and morphed over the years, and I've got to know God better, but yes.
It just goes to show. See, I know about that appendicitis thing. I think this is one of the reasons why I like doing these interviews, because I find out things like that. That's incredible.
Yeah, it was amazing. Like, Mum and Dad were basically told to say goodbye to me as they took me off to theatre, because I was so ill. They suspected a bowel obstruction, and obviously it was an eye surgeon, because he had the finest surgery skills in East Africa.
Yeah, for sure.
And yeah, they happened to go hunting and find an appendix about to burst. So
wow.
Yeah.
So how old were you when you actually moved back here?
I was one when we moved back, so I have no memories. I wish I did, but I don't.
Yeah. And you have four oldest siblings.
I'm the youngest of five, so two brothers and two sisters.
Yeah, and some of them have probably quite good memories of Africa.
Yeah, yeah, they all have memories, which is pretty unfortunate that I don't. And family slide nights were always really boring because I only appeared right at the end and then we came back to Australia and switched to photos. So, you know, it was kind of childhood memories of being left out.
And your parents' story is huge. Can we briefly encapsulate it in...
Yeah. My dad was Dutch Indonesian. So he was in Indonesia when the Second World War broke out. He was then put into a prisoner of war camp by the Japanese and separated. He and his next brother in line, he was the eldest, were separated from the family and treated as adults, even though they were teenagers. They eventually were sponsored to Australia after the war. Dad was an electrician, became a clergyman. He felt the call to East Africa, so went to East Africa and then wrote my mum a letter, who was also the daughter of a clergyman, saying, "Would you like to marry me?" So my mum jumped on a boat by herself and headed out to East Africa to marry someone she obviously had met. But yeah, it was quite amazing, my mum's courage and my dad's courage in those things. So.
Yeah, absolutely it is. It's incredible. Did you feel pressure to be a good Christian because of what they'd been through?
I think mum and dad always had the strong desire that our faith was our own, so that they didn't want us just coming to... They obviously wanted us coming to church, but they wanted it to be our choice as well. So when Sunday sport came into the picture for my brother, they went, "Well, we don't have a Sunday night service, but you need to find somewhere that does." And so it was never about looking good for the family. It was about knowing God and building that relationship for ourselves.
Yeah, that's really awesome. So you studied science.
Yep.
So what interested you in science and where did you find God in science?
I did science because I love learning and I've got a very science-focused brain. And I love learning just for the sake of learning. I'd happily just work in research if it didn't involve grants and politics and all that sort of thing.
Amen.
But I went into science. It seemed like the right thing to do. I don't know. I didn't have any sense of huge career plan other than I loved learning. It was interesting. One of my first years in the science course, we had to write an essay pro or against creation.
Oh.
And I wrote, obviously, pro-creation. And I wrote this really good essay and I got it back in the lecturer who marked it said, "Really good essay, but I couldn't give you a higher mark because I don't believe in what you wrote," even though he could see my argument. So
that's very poor academic.
Yeah,
sorry.
But so I was very, very aware in life sciences where I was studying that it was very evolutionary based. It meant for some good discussions, but I tended not to initiate those discussions. Mm. But I love the fact that in nature you can see so much of God's design. Like, it doesn't work if there's no thought and design behind it. Mm. And I ended up in aquatic botany and I loved looking under electron microscopes at, you know, things that aren't visible to the human eye and just the detail and the beauty of them.
Mm.
I mean... Yeah, I'd love to do that every day.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. I want to say, so we've talked to other scientists. Last week I talked to Steve. We didn't talk a lot about science, actually, but he's definitely a evolution-believing Christian scientist. So, I just want to say for people listening, I think they're Christians who lean both ways.
Absolutely. I mean, I don't necessarily believe in that it happened in 7 days exactly. I think life morphs and changes over many, many years. So, yeah.
I think it would be really wonderful if somebody had been there. Then we'd know for sure. Anyway.
It's much nicer not knowing for sure, because then there's questions and then there's conversations, whereas if it's an absolute, then...
That is so true.
Leaves no space for discussion and theories.
That is absolutely the point. That is a great point to make.
Yeah.
And I think if, as Christians, we can have the conversations without the anger and the angst about...
Oh, absolutely. Know, I'm always open to someone saying, have you thought about this? How does that match up with your beliefs? Mm, and
Yeah, marvellous. Okay, so you married Tim.
Yep.
And then you had a baby and your life changed in a very big way. So how about you tell us about that?
Tim and I got married at the end of 2000, and unlike the stories we'd heard, our first year of marriage was lovely. Our second year of marriage, we conceived Joseph and were expecting Joseph, our eldest, and my mum also got diagnosed with mesothelioma, which is asbestos cancer, and she died a week before our second wedding anniversary while me and two of my sisters were pregnant. So, yeah, it was an interesting launch into parenthood because I didn't have my mum there who would have been my, you know, you ask your mum all the weird questions and I was blessed to have sisters who I could ask weird questions of and is this normal questions. But then 9 months into Joseph's life, he was diagnosed with cerebral palsy. I'd suspect long before that, but... health professionals who only saw glimpses of him didn't see too much cause for alarm because he was alert and following conversations. And but yes, he's got cerebral palsy, and for him it's just a physical disability. There's no intellectual or emotional or behavioural aspects. But yeah, it's ended up that we've had a parenting experience very different to what you plan. You don't kind of fall pregnant and think, oh, I wonder what disability my child would, you know, you block those out. So yes, that's challenged my parenting ideals. You kind of think how you'll parent and then your world turns upside down and you go into survival mode and grief mode for on and off probably for his entire life, I imagine. Yeah. But yeah, very much survival mode for the first few years.
Yeah. So you were telling me a while back that it's been difficult in that his physical disability is so profound.
Yep.
And then there's just no mental disability. No. So he's a very bright
kid. He's a typical teenager. He wants all the independence that typical teenagers have. And in one sense, he's an amazingly well-balanced kid. We haven't had huge, there's obviously occasional tantrums, but we haven't had huge tantrums or anything like that. And it's possibly because we learnt very early on that communication was the key. So we worked hard on his communication and we over-communicate to all our children, I think, because we're used to communicating so well. But yeah, obviously for him now, his friends are getting part-time jobs and learning to drive and going out of a night and drinking, some of them, even though they're a bit young. And it's he can't do a lot of those things. There's some things he doesn't want to do, like the drinking bit, but the rubber's hitting the road in one sense, so his life's quite different.
Yeah, and he's so aware of that.
Absolutely. His most recent argument with me was that he wanted more control over his life, but like a typical teenager, you give them more control and they go, I don't want that much. So, yeah, it's a challenge walking that minefield and balancing giving him independence, keeping him physically safe and cared for. It's a huge challenge. Yeah.
And was it challenging to have another child?
It was. It took us quite a while to be ready to have another child. Mm. I mean, the fact that Joseph barely slept for his first few years of life and still doesn't sleep all night means that you really don't want to add a screaming newborn into the mix. But God, in his grace, knew what we needed and what we could cope for with. And our second child, Daniel, I just say he's a textbook baby. He slept through the night without any effort. He fed, he did everything they meant to do. He talked early, obviously, I think, because he went to speech therapy with Joseph. he got on the go, all those things that as a parent I was probably ready to be anxious about. God really met that without me even asking him for it. We survived just by the grace of God, I think. Yeah. But I mean, Joseph as an only child, he would, as much as he'd love it, he'd hate it. And I love the fact that my kids have siblings and each other.
You have a daughter as
well. I have a daughter, Anna, who's 7, Joseph's 16 and Daniel's 13. And Anna was kind of not in, she was the icing on the cake, shall we say. And I don't know that I'm wired to parent girls quite as easily as parenting boys, but it's nice having a daughter, and obviously the relationships are different, and it's good for the boys to have a sister, good for her to have brothers.
Yep. Where's the challenges in life that make us grow and mature? So how can the church support better people who are in your sort of situation?
It's a really tricky question, because I often ponder this, and I'm just so aware that our experience of disability is quite, in many ways, quite different from the norm. I think as a society, we cope better with knowing how to support those with Down syndrome or those with an intellectual disability. I think for Joseph, the struggle is that he doesn't really necessarily feel like he fits in at youth group, and the typical church activities that we provide for young people and young adults. But having said that, he's got some amazingly good relationships with some of our youth leader at church, who's just moved on to a different job. But he and another couple of adults at church are the reasons Joseph turns up every Sunday. Mm. They're the ones who message him and say, "Joseph, where are you? We missed you." So I think that building relationship really helps. The early years, I definitely appreciated our church village helping out with, looking after kids or dropping a meal off or all the normal things, I guess, a family enjoys and appreciates. But maybe for us it was just helpful to survive.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. But I guess it's that looking at Joseph as an individual and not as a disabled child.
Absolutely, absolutely. And, just thinking about how, the worst thing he hates is people pushing him to do something just because they've made the effort because he's disabled, because for him there's no intellectual disability. He's just like, just don't, you're trying too hard. it's looking how churches can support him. And I think it's down to individuals. It's down to that building relationship and building community. I'm very conscious that, it's those individual relationships that make the difference.
Yeah, with him and with you and with Tim as
absolutely,
well.
Absolutely, absolutely. I mean, I think for many years Tim and I have had our head in the sand, not recognising the impact of Joseph's disability on us, because it's just what we've known as life. It's our journey. And only more recently, when Joseph's become more independent, we've gone, is this what life's like the rest of the world? Is this how easy it is just to get two kids off to school who can do it all themselves,
it's really huge. But I guess what my take-home message is, this is not a one-size-fits-all.
No, it's a really, really complex thing, because, some people like Joseph with cerebral palsy would have processing issues or sensory issues, which church just doesn't match. Often what families need at church is a difficulty, whether it's getting your kids to sit through church or cope with the loudness or the number of people. I think the beauty is when the Christian community can often offer flexibility. So things outside of the typical Sunday service.
Yes, I know that one of my friends went to church on Sunday. She looked at her daughter who has autism and not huge, but she's on the spectrum, but she just looked at, okay, we're starting school, which is when we're recording this, by the way, like second week back at school. We're starting school, everything's changing for her, and yep. She just can't cope with being yep. inside the big church. So they just sat in the foyer and their daughter did craft all over the floor and nobody had a problem.
No,
and it was fine. And I thought to have the sense to say, this is what we need. Yep. And you know, church was still part of it, but it yep. was, you know, flexible, I think is it was beautiful. I
really yeah. knew. Well, Sunday for us, Joseph chose to stay home from church and we just had to go, okay, you've had three big days of school at a new school with new people, new aides, new everything. And he just couldn't process any more relationship, you know, kind of interaction. And we went, that's fine. You know, yeah. God still loves you, even if you can't make church. So it's partly walking that teenage line of they don't always want to go to church with mum and dad too. So
yeah. Which is just for normal teenagers. It's hard enough. When do we push and when do we hold back? And yeah,
I know.
Absolutely. No, I get that. Okay. So there's more to your life than just being a parent. What else is happening for you right now?
Well, this year is different from the last few. I've been working as the office manager at Edge Anglican, my local church. But 6 months ago, I got the sense that God was calling me to do something different. So obedient to that, I went, okay, God, I'm going to take a month to work out what you want me to do and not react from emotion or tiredness or whatever.
It's because that change point often just feels like, I don't like what's happening at the moment. I feel really uncomfortable.
I just want to run away.
Wait, so if you're feeling that at the moment, it might be that God's saying, actually, time for something new.
Absolutely. And so I took a month, and week one into the month, I went, well, God, what am I going to do if I'm not at work? Like, I'm not an idle person. I like to fill my time with something. And I was sitting there and go study theology. And I just sat there absolutely floored because that was not what I was expecting. And then obviously I went through the whole, I'm not good enough. How will I cope financially? Can we do it? I'm not good enough. I don't know enough about God. And suffice to say, it took me 3 weeks to even mention it to my darling husband, let alone anyone else. Tim is not the most prompt at giving feedback. He likes to process things. And so one Sunday lunch, we were washing up and I just dropped into the conversation my idea of quitting work and studying theology. He was aware of the quitting work bit, and his immediate response was, go for it. It's perfect. And I just got again, totally floored me, because it's like, how can someone who doesn't like to make decisions respond like that? Yeah. So for me, that was confirmation that it was really something of God, and things are falling into place. I am about to start a graduate diploma in divinity through Ridley Online. Mm-hmm. So much to my children's relief, we're not moving away to do it. although I think the younger two would be keen for a year or two in Melbourne, but so I'm going to fill my time by studying, but at a part-time load, so I can still balance Joseph's care needs and setting him up for the future. So
yeah,
it's a bit weird the first week back of school, not going to work and being effectively unemployed and
just, I've had this conversation with Marion, like, where do you find that? Where do you think that's going to lead? And the answer is, I want to study theology this year, isn't it?
Yeah. Very much a sense of, I'm taking it 1 year at a time. I have no idea what's beyond this year. I have a heart. I'm willing to admit now I have a heart for ministry.
Hooray.
And I think it's being the child of, you know, clergy person. You kind of go, I don't want to be like my parents. But I've got a heart for ministry and I've got a few murmurings of what God is putting before me, but no fixed plans beyond studying for a year. So
yeah, it's pretty exciting.
I know. At some point I'll need to find a job probably, but
one step at a time. Okay, so when do you feel close to God?
I think I feel closest to God when I've got, dare I say it, when I've got life in balance and a little bit more space. I find when life gets busy and I get overwhelmed, one of the, you know, I kind of have this inner monologue of praying a lot of the time, but it's almost my relationship with God changes when I'm under pressure. I love music, and even just putting on a worship CD when I'm washing the dishes, I'll often end up in worship and the dishes won't matter. And I have a really, I guess, a really strong sense of God through music and also through nature. I love photography. So, you know, I get amazed by God so many times that,
Yeah, and even viewing those sea creatures through the...
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely.
Yeah, for sure. Cool. And what's one thing about God or Christianity that you wish everyone knew?
That's a really hard question. I think one thing I've learned is that everyone's experience of God is so unique. And there's immense beauty in the uniqueness of people's stories, in how they even experience God on a day-to-day level. I guess I've had those experiences of God's presence, which have been undeniable, but I know other Christians who love God with all their heart, but, you know, have never spoken in tongues, even though they'd love to, you know. Everyone's experience is so different, and it's so rich when you have time to hear other people's stories. I think finding the depths of God when you're at your lowest point is amazing. Like there's nothing like it, but also being able to share your story so that you can bless others. Maybe you'll say something that at the time you'll think is insignificant, and it'll come to them at a time when they need it most. And I mean, I just love the fact that God is so big and so immense that he's the one God, but we do experience him differently. I think that's the thing that I love and appreciate about God.
Yeah, that's a really awesome insight. I like that. It's like that, taking that elephant, you know, story and turning it on its head, you know.
Absolutely, absolutely.
The one God that, yeah.
He's just so diverse, I guess. And I mean, I'd love to live in another culture and see the different way God is experienced in a different culture to our Western culture. I think in our Western culture we can pigeonhole God into a Sunday morning or into a God's only there when I'm feeling blessed or whatever. And I'd love to see how other cultures experience God. And
yeah, absolutely. Thank you so much for sharing with us. It's been awesome to hear your story.
Thank you. It's been a lovely privilege.
I think one of my take-home messages from Marianne's talk today is just to reach out to everybody, whether they look like you or not, whether they sound or act like you or not, but reach out and be friendly, be friends, and make relationship with them. You never know when someone might be the biggest blessing to you or you might be the biggest blessing to them. Next week is another chapter from My Year of Saying No about the seasons of life and about what you do when life says no to you. And we talk a bit about all those different factors of seasons and things that change. Special thanks to Catherine Joy from Joy Music House for the music for this podcast. And remember to share if this could be helpful to anyone. And I will chat with you again next week.